Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
Recently, there's been some new approvals of medications also that are anti-VEGF or anti-VEGF-like treatments, including faricimab and aflibercept high dose, which are some of the newer treatments that have potential to extend durability.
Today, Drs. Patel and Armstrong joined the podcast to discuss advances in retinal therapy, emerging strategies for DME and wet AMD in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Grayson Armstrong, and I'm the Director of Ophthalmic Emergency Services at Mass Eye and Ear. I'm an instructor of ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts, and a retina specialist.
And I'm Nimish Patel. I'm the Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology at Harvard Medical School, and I'm also the Director of Pediatric Retina and the Associate Fellowship Director of the Vitreoretinal Surgery Fellowship.
Today, I'd like us to discuss current and emerging therapies for diabetic macular edema and wet AMD. Ready to get started?
Absolutely, Grayson.
So let's start with where we are today. Can you take us through where we are in our current anti-VEGF therapy agents and how that's meeting the long-term needs of patients with DME and wet AMD, especially when it comes to durability and treatment burden?
Yeah, well, we're really lucky to be in this era of a lot of emerging therapies. What we've started off with is two major therapies in terms of anti-VEGF treatments that can treat both DME and wet AMD. The one that we all started with was Avastin, which is bevacizumab, and that has been working well, but it's off-label. And so recently approved FDA therapies include aflibercept and ranibizumab. That's been the mainstay of treatment for the last few years. These are often dosed on an every 4 to 8 week schedule, and especially patients with AMD need to be coming back every month or two for these treatments, potentially for the rest of their life. There are some patients who can extend out a little bit further, but it's hard to know who they are. These treatments fortunately also work for diabetic macular edema, and we've been using them in about the same way. Recently, there's been some new approvals of medications also that are anti-VEGF or anti-VEGF-like treatments, including faricimab and aflibercept high dose, which are some of the newer treatments that have potential to extend durability. In the trials, they showed that there are some patients who can get up to 20 weeks and 16 weeks of durable therapeutic effect, which is potentially changing the way we manage this disease. We never really thought that Q20 weeks was possible on our old treatments, but it is potential now. The tricky part is some of the trials, we didn't really have a fair comparator arm, so it's hard to know exactly how they compare one-to-one in the same dosing schedule, but it seems that way in the initial treatment period and our initial experience with these medications that we are seeing some at least extended durability. Hmm. With that said, there's still some room to go here. So we are getting patients out to 3-4 months, some of them, but that's not good enough for some patients who have challenges coming into the clinic. Maybe they have caregivers who need to take time off work. So there's still room. And if you ask a bunch of retina specialists what the biggest unmet need is, everyone says durability.
You're right. We're seeing a lot more interest in these alternative delivery strategies. Can you walk us through some of the key developments with biodegradable implants or sustained release approaches and how we might change our treatment approach?
Yeah, this is a really exciting time. So the most recent one that was approved was the port delivery system. And this is a system whereby it can be refilled and slowly deliver the medication. The advantage is instead of being a bolus, you're getting sustained delivery at a steady state and some zero order kinetics. And there is some theories, particularly in diabetes, that the bouncing effect and having a large treatment effect for a small period of time is not good for the retina, and having actually a sustained therapeutic steady state is better in the long run. And what this does is it gets refilled every 6 months. So every 24 weeks, which is much less injections than many of the patients were used to getting. The downside of this treatment is it is a surgical device that has to be implanted in the operating room, and the refills can be done in clinic. There was some issues with the septum, and the system was temporarily removed from the market. However, it is back in action. And so this is a potentially exciting area for sustained durability. Now, there is a lot of potential in this system because it's not just the medication that's inside. It could be a system whereby we deliver even newer medications. So that's something to be thinking about going forward. In terms of biodegradable options, so that's a non-biodegradable option, and that implant has to stay in the eye. In terms of biodegradable options, particularly in diabetic disease, we have degradable steroids. So we have steroid implants that can go inside the eye, offer these zero-order kinetics or sustained release, and last up to 6 months in duration and provide sustained effect. Oftentimes, these can be used in conjunction with our traditional anti-VEGF injections to provide a short-term and long-term benefit at the same time, similar to how people use insulin for diabetes. There are some research now into different therapeutics, including tyrosine kinase inhibitors, which are being placed within implants that are injected to the eye that are biodegradable.
You know, these tyrosine kinase inhibitors are getting a lot of attention. What's the potential mechanism of action for the tyrosine kinase inhibitors, and what early data or trials are you watching most closely?
Yeah, it's a new therapeutic area within this space, so it's a completely different mechanism. And it does inhibit VEGF, so you say, well, how is it different? Well, this actually works on the intracellular level instead of the extracellular, meaning it has a slightly different mechanism and could be potentially synergistic with the other anti-VEGFs that we already have. So it could be that we can use these in conjunction or with monotherapy. The other advantage of these medications is they're quite safe. So one of the downsides of steroids is that they can cause cataracts or high eye pressure. In the early studies and the clinical trials that we're seeing, we're not getting these safety signals with the tyrosine kinase inhibitors. It's yet to be 100% proven how the efficacy is, but there are phase 3 clinical trials that are currently enrolling suggesting good tolerability as well as durability for wet AMD and DME.
Gene therapy is another exciting frontier in this space. How do you see its potential role taking place in terms of retinal disease management? And what are the main barriers to adoption in clinical practice?
So I'm super excited about gene therapy. There's definitely some ups and downs that come along with it. The current treatment that I think is probably closest to being adopted or FDA approved is in phase 3 clinical trials, which is a subretinal gene therapy. And the way it works is that a viral vector is used and it's injected into the subretinal space. This can then actually produce the anti-VEGF medications that we inject into the eye. And there have been studies suggesting that this effect can go on for years. And that is very exciting for patients who want to avoid injections completely over the long run. The downsides of this medication is that, one, it has to be implanted in a surgical procedure. The number two is there's no off switch. So if there are any negative effects, such as atrophy of the retina, they can't really be turned off, or at least we don't have that mechanism currently. So there is a risk-benefit where there's a potential where it could completely obviate the need for monthly injections or even yearly injections. However, we don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. With that said, it's very exciting. There is also the intravitreal option. There's a couple companies working on intravitreal gene therapy, which works in a similar fashion. This can be limited by inflammation, as the viral vector can have more inflammation in the intravitreal space rather in the subretinal space, which is more immunoprivileged.
So with all these emerging options, how should clinicians think about sequencing or selecting which therapy is right for their patient, especially those with suboptimal responding to current therapies?
Yeah, and I think this is a really important question of what's going to happen going forward. We don't know the answer to that because many of these are still not FDA approved and they're still in clinical trials. A lot are going to depend on the insurance companies and the cost. As the cost of these medications increase, sometimes the insurance companies may not cover all of these medications or they may require a stepwise approach. If you're talking from the retina specialist side, I usually myself tend to go by the one that has the longest data and the longest safety. The number one thing we can't do is harm, and that's really our mantra in medicine. So I always start with the medications that has good safety and good efficacy. And then if we are failing on the efficacy, I move to potentially a newer treatment, also hopefully with a good safety profile. So I usually start with one of the first or second generation anti-VEGF medications. If we're talking diabetes, then move to a steroid, especially if the patient has already had cataract surgery and has been steroid challenged. And then to something more sustained delivery if there's no issue with that. As we get gene therapy and tyrosine kinase inhibitors, it will be a little bit tricky to understand how these are going to play in, especially if we have anti-VEGF injections that can extend out to 6 months. is it worth doing something like gene therapy if you're only needing 2 injections a year? I think that will be really a patient-doctor discussion, and depending on what their external factors are and the way they want to come in for these injections, how far they have to travel, and what the potential side effects are.
Well, finally, thinking about impact, what advances do you think could truly shift the standard of care for DME and wet AMD in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think it's really going to be the potential gene therapy is the major one. So the rest of these medications are management. They're treating the disease and the side effects of the disease. The anti-VEGF gene therapy actually has a potential to be a cure if it can continuously produce the medication in perpetuity. And we have some evidence from this from other gene therapies and inherited retinal conditions, particularly Luxturna. It seems to be working. It's still new, but it seems to be working for up to 5+ years. So that's a really exciting frontier if we can get over the hurdle, get these medications approved, and make sure there are no negative effects. That could be a major advancement in the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, this has been an amazing discussion. Thank you for joining me today and exploring the current and emerging therapies for diabetic macular edema and wet AMD, including the novel treatment platforms, delivery platforms, and future treatment targets.
My pleasure, Gracian. This has been great.
And thank you for joining us today.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, or TuneIn. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guest, Drs. Patel and Armstrong. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.